and only composer, songwriter, keyboardist, just overall musician, really. It really is an honor to have you on Sonic Dorms, just to educate people that are unaware of the immense amount of work that you've done for a variety of artists. So one of the biggest things that I have to say, that I always like to introduce people to, maybe that aren't familiar with your work or whoever it is that I bring on the show, is the origin story, the roots of it all. And so for you, what were some of those initial inspirations for you as a musician, as a composer, when you first started?
Well, it's changed a lot over time. I'm not to date myself, but, you know, I mean, my early days, you know, learning how to play guitar, I was jamming along with B.B. King, Creedence Clearwater, and all that. And, you know, quickly in came the Beatles, you know, which were and still are just a huge writing inspiration. I mean, just the things that they wrote in the short amount of time that they did is mind-boggling to me. Just such classic melodies. And I saw Paul McCartney maybe 3 years ago. I played here in Nashville, and I think I relived my entire life during his set, you know, just such classic songs. So that's it. I just was doing that, and you know, kind of, you know, wanted to be a guitar player, but didn't have a guitar yet, and was taking piano lessons. And I've told this story before. My cousin had moved into our house temporarily with this guy, Joe, and he was playing acoustic guitar and songs. And he went on to become Country Joe in the Fish, who played Woodstock and all that. But Joe is the one who finally, you know, showed me how to play my first guitar chords and all that. And but thankfully I stuck with keyboards as well. I've played both my whole life, and keyboards has been the main way I've gotten a lot of the gigs, because of course there's a million great guitar players, and but there's not as many keyboard players and keyboard players that can play guitar pretty well and sing reasonable backups. I'm not incredible, but I'm good at blending, and I've got good pitch. So
was it easy for you? Do you feel like you had an advantage applying that dexterity as a guitarist onto keyboards as a player?
You know, I don't know. I love playing both. I always feel a little bit stifled if I'm in a band where I'm only playing one or the other. I played, you know, with Cinderella and then the Tom Kiefer thing. And, you know, I did that for about 5 years and, you know, just absolutely a great gig. I mean, Tom is just such a rock star and, such a nice guy. But I was really missing playing guitar. These days I'm back out doing the Winger shows and getting to just switch back and forth a lot and just love it, you know?
So speaking of Winger and a huge part of your career, really, where did that journey begin for you? I know it all sort of started with your time working with Alice Cooper with Kip. Am I correct?
Yeah. Me and Kip got the gig for Alice in, this was 1986. And I came in, Alice just held an audition. I knew they basically told me like, hey, we don't have anybody else. So if you come down and you do even reasonably well and you want to do it, we'd love to have you. So I came down and Alice was like, do you know 18? And I'm like, well, yeah, you know, so we played literally half the song and he stopped. He goes, you got the gig, you know, he goes, it's not rocket science. This stuff is easy. So it was great. But I would come to rehearsals early. I was the new guy. I didn't want to blow the gig. So Kip was sitting in the hallway one day with his little boom box playing some stuff. And I was listening. I was like, wow, man, that's incredible stuff. Who is that? And he's like, oh, it's some stuff I wrote last year. And I go, who's singing? And he's like, me. And I was like, that's your voice? I'm like, shit, you got a strong voice. So we just started writing. We had a little Insonic keyboard and we drag it around on, you know, into our hotel rooms. And, for the year I was with Alice, we wrote a lot of stuff. And then me, Kip, and our drummer, Ken Mary, all flew. We had a break at the end of the first year. We flew to Boulder, Colorado, where Kip's brother had a studio, and recorded a 5-song demo with a bunch of different styles. And everybody heard it and liked the two really rocks, you know, because that was, you know, mid 80s. And they just said, yeah, you know, we had like a couple progressive things and we had a couple, you know, we tried some different styles and everybody's like, go with, you know, the rock thing. We had a song Dirty Blonde on there, which we ended up releasing a song called Dirty Blonde later, but it was a different one than we had on this original demo. But anyway, yeah. And it just never stopped, you know.
This is where it gets really interesting for me, because at its core, Winger, or Sahara, as it was originally going to go under the name Sahara, were really more of a prog sort of thing. I mean, it sounds to me like you guys were like an elite caliber of musicians. I mean, between you and Kip, and then bringing in Reb, and then, Rod later on at the very end of all that. But
I'm probably the caboose of that chain, but Kip is the mastermind of a lot of the more complex stuff and just writing in general. I mean, cause you know, he's the singer, he knows what he wants to sing, and you know, as many ideas as I can throw out of Reb, I like to write more complete songs. Reb's an idea and riff guy, you know? And so Kip loves that, cause he can just take all those ideas and do his own thing, you know, where with me, you know, I get in on the songwriting part and go, how about this? What about, you know? So, I don't know. It's been great. I mean, it's great run, and I don't know.
You feel like that's what, like at the end of the day, like had you not had that sort of like, we're veering for some sort of commercial success here, if they would have just let you run with whatever it was, you guys would have just came out the gate as like an all out progressive rock band.
I think that would have worked. I mean, you know, there was numerous attempts. I guess Kip had tried numerous times before with some stuff. And, you know, Doug Morris at Atlantic was like, I can tell there's talent, but no. And, this time we got Bo Hill involved and we did another demo and, you know, started sticking to more just mainstream rock. And, you know, I mean, the first demo had, you know, 17 Madeline and Headed for Heartbreak, you know, out of the five songs. I mean, and that time they were like, all right, we get this. And, but, you know, honestly, at the point we got in, things were starting to kind of fade a little bit. Little did we know. I mean, we are really lucky that we got in when we did, because you know, by the 90s, you know, and this was by the time we got started, you know, got the record done and got it out there, it was 88. And you know, we did really well with the first one. It was a double platinum record, and then by 90, you know, the next record was, you know, only a, you know, not only, but you know, it was platinum, and you know, and we were starting to see the lack of people showing up at shows, and pretty soon, you know, we were kind of taking it personally, like, where is it? God, do they not like us anymore? And you know, but then we started going and seeing some other shows and noticing it there too. I'll never forget, I went to see Extreme Cinderella and David Lee Roth in Cincinnati. I happened to be there, so I called the guys. I said, "Hey, I'm coming down." And I remember it had been a place that we had done shows like a year before, and it was packed. And I got there, and it wasn't very crowded. And I was like, "What is going on?" You know. But
that was the A Little Ain't Enough tour, I believe. That's where with David Lee Roth. That was like 1990, 1991. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the new guys were coming in. That's what happens. You know, it circles around, and one minute you're popular and the next minute everyone's moved on to the next best thing. You know,
it's a shame though, because you guys were still, to me, at the peak of your, you know, you were in your prime still, and you had only just done your second, just come off of that second record in the Heart of the Young. And I think you still had a lot more to give and deliver. So it's a shame that things kind of turned out that way for a lot of the younger acts, just as they were starting to get out the gate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, at the time we got signed, I knew of some other really good bands that were kind of in line with us to kind of get signed, and you know, they never had their day, and they were super talented. So, you know, I mean, we feel extremely lucky that we got in when we did and had the success we did. And, you know, and then of course for the 90s, we all were out doing other things, trying to reinvent ourselves. And then probably, you know, in the early 2000s, all of a sudden it started turning around where our style was fun and cool again. And, you know, thankfully, and I mean, we've all been just playing tons of gigs, and it's been incredible, of course, up until, you know, the last COVID years. But you know, but we're all getting back out there again. We have a pretty good schedule coming up with Winger, and so yeah.
Good. And going back, you brought up a very a name that is known in the production circles, sort of a legend, really. Bo Hill, what did he bring to Winger? Because what I like about those first two records is his influence isn't as apparent as some of his other projects. It sounds to me like he let you guys be yourselves ultimately, because you guys did know your craft very well. You guys knew what you were doing. You had the songs. What did Bo Hill bring to the table for Winger during that run?
He had the connections in, because he'd already had some great success with Rat and some other bands and Warrant. And so he had the sound of the day. And, you know, but past that, I mean, and him and Kip had written a lot together and, or not written a lot, you know, they'd worked together on various other projects. You know, Kip was playing on, you know, doing session stuff for like Roger Daltrey and some other stuff. And so they had worked together, and I think they kind of developed a how they were going to do it type thing, you know. I mean, but Kip, you know, in his head really had a good idea of how the songs were going to go and how he wanted it to sound. And then Bo brought the technical thing of making it all come together, you know. So,
yeah. And then going into that, the first record is a lot more direct, in your face, a lot more punchy, rocky. And then you get Expansive. I remember the first time I heard In the Heart of the Young, outside of Can't Get Enough, once you start getting the stuff like even a song like Miles Away, which you wrote, but then songs like Rainbow and the Rose, which that's to me like a prog jam if there ever was one. I've heard
that song took Kip a long time. We'd you know meet up on the weekends and he'd go, hey, you keep playing me the new version. It was getting longer and longer and more, you know. And by the end, I was like, dude, that is an amazing song. He did, you know, I think that was just all him, and he did a great job on that.
I've heard stories that when you first brought in that record, In the Heart of the Young, it was a lot more proggy and a lot more just not at all like what was expected to be delivered at that time. What do you remember briefly, like what that initial track list looked like for that album?
Yeah, I mean, we ended up probably getting rid of three or four songs. I mean, we thought, oh, cool, you know, we had a great first record and now we can kind of start doing a little more of what we want and, you know, get some more complex stuff in there. And, you know, I mean, we had Rod Morgenstein on drums and we're, you know, sitting there making him play, you know. So we thought, man, let's do some stuff where Rod can really spread his wings and all that. And, you know, the label had other ideas. You know, they're like, guys, this doesn't not sound like the first record, you know, and we knew it didn't, you know, but we, and maybe I mean, they were probably right. We, you know, you got to ease people into that, or just if you want to do your own thing, just put a little of it, you know, and keep on the track. You know, you don't want to just completely change course over one record to the next. So, yeah, it was a good call on their part, I think, you know, of course, because, you know, Easy Come, Easy Go and Can't Get Enough were decent singles. And so, you know, it's all good. And you know what? Playing them these days, we have fun playing them and the crowd sings them. And, you know, that's what it's all about.
Right. And then transitioning outside of Winger, then you start doing other things. You start working with legends like Steve Perry. How did you get brought into the fold working with someone like Steve Perry, who's a really, you talk about writing songs, that's somebody there who really knows their way around. It's all about the songs for Steve Perry, right?
It was probably the best learning experience of my life working with Steve, and a lot of fun. It was a great 3 years. And, you know, I learned probably, if anyone said, what's the biggest thing you learned? It's melody wise, Steve, you know, everything I was working on, I was like kind of busy and, you know, and Steve would just float a melody over no matter what we were doing. It was just, and I, you know, not tons of words, not, you know, I mean, sometimes, but generally he just would just had a knack for, you know, he's great with melody and of course, what a voice. And I mean, I'm a Bay Area guy. I grew up outside of San Francisco. So, you know, was a Journey fan from the early days and, you know, had worked actually with Neil and Jonathan. When I was playing with Eric Martin, we had a period of time that we called Eric Martin and Friends. And it was us with Neil and Jonathan and one time with Greg Rowley playing with us. And we had three girl background singers and did a bunch of shows in the Bay Area like that. But I had never worked with Steve and, you know, was always a huge fan of his voice. So at the point that happened. I couldn't even, there was a day once we finally made it on the road, you know, we were in the days of rehearsal was a couple of years and writing, we wrote the record kind of in a live scenario. And then we put the set together and, you know, of course, learned a lot of the Journey hits as well as the stuff off the record. And I just remember one day I was on stage just playing and I looked over and I think that's the moment it hit me. I was like, oh my God, I'm on stage with Steve, you know? But it was great. It was a great, one of my favorite periods of being in a band, you know, the band we put together with Moyes Lucas Jr. And Todd Jensen, who's now with Journey, and Lincoln Brewster, who's got an amazing Christian artist career and just phenomenal band. Great days.
Is there, I've watched footage from that tour. It looked like everything was, it looked like that band was really alive. It felt like there was a real synergy in the air.
It was great. I mean, so. We used to sit in the morning. Steve loves to get up really early. So we'd sit in the morning and we'd get there at about 9 and we'd all sit and have coffee and we would just talk for the first hour. And, you know, it was really great, man. You know, and then of course getting to play all those songs that, you know, Jonathan, Steve and Neil wrote. I mean, those guys are amazing songwriters.
Is there tonight? Oh yeah,
Toto and Journey tonight. Yeah,
right on, man. Yeah. Is there a specific highlight for you off that record? Because I think that's a very underrated record. The came out in 1994 for The Love of Strange Medicine. The title track, especially, I think is an incredible piece of work. Is there a highlight for you off that album?
The Love of Strange Medicine.
Yeah,
yeah. That song just really. That's probably my favorite song. And I've maybe told this story before, but real briefly, we were in the record plant and recording, and I had this little amplifier and this little keyboard, and Steve came walking in with Randy Jackson, who was working for our label at the time. He wasn't playing. And he's like, "Hey, Randy, watch this." He goes, "Paul, write something." And I'm like, "What?" You know, and I had this little guitar amp and it sounded awful. I'm like, "Steve, this isn't real, you know," and they kept egging me on, and Randy's like, "Come on." Yeah. And so I kind of start playing these chords and, you know, and they're like, "Oh, that's cool." And they're like, "Then where would you go?" And I'm like, so I remember the day before I'd been playing stuff. So I went into this thing that I knew. And so finally they're like, "See, yeah, it was cool." And they go walking out. And I was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe he did that to me in front of, it was Randy and some other people from the label." And I'm like, and so the next day we had a rehearsal. Matter of fact, we were going to be playing, we were auditioning a bass player, and our, manager came in and said, "Hey, you know, Randy called and he wants you guys to work up that record plan idea." And I thought he was completely pulling my leg. I'm like, "Yeah, ha ha." You know, I said, "That was so uncool, Steve." And, he really liked the chords and just said, "Yeah, see what you can do with it." And so I'm like, "Oh my gosh." So with that bass player there that day, we're like, "Okay." I said, "You guys, I got asked to do this. Could we just please for a second, just kind of," so we started messing around with it and it started finding its way. And then, you know, by the end, I don't know how it found its way to what it did. You know, we kept adding parts because that record we wrote in a live scenario at a Third Encore. We would just jam every day live. And, it just slowly got bigger and bigger and, you know, God, the end result, I just love some of Steve's vocals on that song. And I love just that little, the crazy melodic guitar part thing that me and Lincoln came up with. And yeah, a lot of fun, man. Those days were great.
Yeah, fantastic. For anybody who hasn't checked out that album, I think it's vastly underrated. But and now moving
sonically better, you know, back in the day and everybody was just getting into digital and it sounds a little digital. I wish it was a little bit warmer. And even in the day, I know me and Steve, you know, we remixed it quite a few times, but you know, so you can't, you know, can't fix it in the mix, I guess, you know.
Yeah, James Barden, who was coming off of working with Queensryche and Rush, he had worked with that on that. But agree. It does sound, like you said, a little too, what's the word? It's just a very, it's not even crisp. Crisp isn't the word I'm looking for, but it does have that digital, much of that digital. And not in a Def Leppard Mutt Lange way. I'm talking, there's something else happening there. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. You're right.
It's sonically probably not the best record, but you know, it's
the songs are there.
Great moments on it. And, you know,
yeah, the songs are there and the work comes through and Steve sounds incredible. Even in 1994, his voice sounds like it aged very well.
Yes. He has just an iconic voice. Nobody sounds like that guy. You know, he's just amazing.
And then bringing it to the present tense now, I know you've been doing, you've done a lot of photography work. Am I correct?
Yeah. You know, I went through a long phase of really loving, and I'm always, as everyone knows, these days it's just with my cameras. With my phone, sorry. I'm not using my cameras anymore because they're all film, and I haven't been really doing it anymore, but I still do with my phone. I post a lot of shots on my sites and I love doing that, but I was in it and I had a full set of lights and the whole bit, and it was a phase, you know.
But you are still, of course, you're back with Winger though. That's for sure. Right. That's
I mean, for a while it was hit and miss. I Kip would just call me for the bigger shows, they were playing a lot of smaller clubs, and, these days when we do it, we keep the new guy too, who's Johnny, who's been there since 92. So we do it as a five piece, 'cause we just love, we've got everybody singing and it's just a lot of fun having all of us, but they can play without me, which they've covered me recently. I had some family stuff going on, so I had to fly back to California, and they can totally pull it off without me. But so I was doing just the bigger shows, because with five of us, you play a small club, it's, no one walks out with any money. So, but we, this last, couple years, Kip was just like, hey, can you jump back in? So I've been doing everything, and, it's been just awesome. And this year, recently we've got quite a schedule coming up, and shows are getting added. So, it's nice to be playing again.
I'm a huge fan of new music, especially from older artists. I like when artists remain creative throughout the course of their career. Winger has made an incredible last 3-4 albums in a row. I don't think Winger hasn't not delivered a great record since they came back in 06. But I'm curious, are you on the upcoming new studio album from Winger?
Yeah. I didn't write anything for it, but I played keyboards on it. And possibly one guitar solo that Kip wants me to play, which we might try and pull out. We were supposed to do it a couple of weeks ago and I had to leave town, but which is really nice of him to let me play a guitar solo. It's all done. I did a bunch of keyboards on it, and Kip's trying to mix it amidst all the stuff he's got going on with writing symphonies. And, he's in LA watching them do his ballet last weekend. And, he's always got a million things going, which is great, as he should, because he's super talented. I'm assuming, I haven't heard when they plan on releasing it. I think probably toward the end of the year. So
you coming back into the fold as a musician with new Winger music, was that something, what was your take when you heard these songs? Because lately Winger has become almost like that proggier, more, I guess, complex band, I think, musically, from a songwriting perspective, on the last 3-4 albums. I mean, ever since really Pool in 93. So what was your take on the new music that was being written, now you being involved with it to a degree?
Yeah, well, this one's definitely more in that direction. This is not a simple rock record. It's definitely, it sounds like a Kip solo record. I mean, it's, he wrote a lot on this. I was frantically writing with other people at the time, and I knew by the time I tried to jump in with Kip and Reb, they would probably have it handled, which, Reb had flown down several times. And once those guys get going, man, they're very prolific. And, so I didn't get any songs on this one, which, it's fine. I've got some other songs elsewhere, but, maybe next one.
Early
for the next one.
Well, you're writing with other people, and I can't let you go without bringing this up, because I genuinely really was shocked when I heard the results of this tune. I love the song. I love the whole situation. Turned out great. But to top it off, I saw your name in the songwriting credits. And of course, I'm talking about The Gang's All Here, which is the new single from Skid Row. When I saw Paul Taylor on there in the songwriting credits, I go, no way. That's insane. This song, I mean, I just didn't expect your name to pop up there, but I love that song so much. I think that's such a killer comeback for them, just from a song perspective.
Thanks. Yeah, me, Snake, and Rach got together and banged that one out really fast. And, we had initial demo that we did at my house, and, you know, you just write songs and your brain is never going, oh, this is a single or this, you know, it was just a fun little rocker. And, you know, we were all sitting around kind of singing how we would hear melodies and stuff, but and then Rach took it and, you know, made more of a meal out of it. And I didn't, you know, he got a friend of ours, Ryan, to sing a quick demo of it. And he said, hey, it turned out really good. And I didn't even hear that. And then time went on and I just kind of forgotten about it. And, he called me not too long ago and said, you're not going to believe this. It's the title track of the record. And I was like, what? I thought it had probably gotten lost in the shuffle, because those guys are, you know, they're great songwriters and got plenty of cool tunes. And so I was shocked and really happy, man. And I feel really lucky that they included me.
How long ago did you start working on that song? It sounds to me like it took that
Rachel just told me the other day, he's like, dude, do you realize we did that in 2018? And I can't even, I mean, time is just flying. Cause I mean, it seems like, you know, yesterday we did it. It was a while ago. So that's why I kind of had forgotten. And I just thought, wow, you know, it was fun, of course, to write. They're my buds. And, but yeah, really, really happy how it turned out. And of course they got a new singer, Eric Gronwald, and the guy is just such a fantastic singer and, you know, definitely made it come to life, you know?
What did you bring to that song initially? I know you said that it was just a full on collaboration, but what was your imprint on that song, you believe, like even now when you listen to it?
I had the main groove, the da na na na, mm-hmm. But I had it kind of like with a Motown, you know, drum thing, and, you know, and Rach just really liked it. And so we just started kind of adding stuff to it. And, you know, so, but yeah, Rachel did a majority of the lyrics, and, you know, it all just came together. So,
well, that's a surprise. Honestly, I was surprised in the best of ways when I heard that. And I saw your name on it. I go, that's fantastic. And the fact that you get that, like, as you mentioned, you get the lead single, the title track on their upcoming, on the Skid Row upcoming record, The Gang's All Here. Fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah, it's fun. I've just, you know, to me, I mean, nothing's more fun than having a song finally, you know, get out and have people respond to it, you know? And, that's also, I mentioned the other day in a podcast, I worked the last couple of years on Mick Mars' solo project. And that one, I wrote most of the record with Mick and Jacob Bunton, who sang with Steven Adler. Me and Jacob have written a lot of stuff for TV together, and really excited to have that come out. And that, I think, is going to be towards the end of the year as well. And Mick is so awesome, and just the endless cool things he comes up with and the palette of sounds. And I, you know, there's days I just go, is that guitar? Is that you doing all that? You know, so really fun and very excited about that.
I am too. And thank you for mentioning that, because I've been waiting on that Mick Mars record for what's maybe a decade almost at this point. I mean, it's taken on various forms, I think, just because coming out of the Motley Crue world, trying to figure out a direction and trying to figure out what, you know, which way you should go in. But once I heard that, you know, Jacob got involved in the songwriting, I felt like it was going to deliver in every way, because he's a fantastic vocalist. I loved him on that Adler record. And I think he's a fantastic songwriter. And then you're in the fold as well, which is.
Yeah, no, the three of us worked on that for, you know, a good year and a half. Mick doesn't really want to say too much about it, but he sort of, you know, it's okay just to say it's, you know, it's a heavy record. It's definitely heavy. It's, I mean, and it's very versatile. You know, I feel really lucky that, I got to sit and work with him and go, you know, turn these things into songs. I think it's going to blow some people away. It's really cool.
Can't wait to hear it. So anything else that people can look forward to checking out from you in the near future that you can disclose?
You know, I'm starting to put together my own thing, which I mentioned the other day in another one. And I just, I don't know how I'm going to do it, whether it'll be a full record or if it'll be song by song, but I've got a lot of leftover stuff and that I think is pretty good that just hasn't gotten used yet. So I just thought, you know, maybe I'll just do something for myself for once, you know?
Would it come out under your own name or completely?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be, it's not like, you know, it would just kind of be, you know, Paul Taylor and friends, because I would get different singers on different songs because the variety of stuff I have is kind of vast. It won't be anything that I'm trying to, you know, go out there and be the new band or anything. It'll just be like, hey, here's what I do on my own time, you know, and it'll be just primarily written by me. So
freshly recorded though, right? Nothing like just demos thrown on there. This is going to be brand new recorded material, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to take some of these ideas. Well, I already have started, just re-recording them. You know, I've got good templates, you know, finished on three, but they're just electronic drums at this point. I'll probably grab some friends, to play some real drums on it, and then, you know, get them, figure out which songs what singer would be great for which songs, you know? And then of course I'll be calling and begging for everyone to sing on my songs, you know?
If you could ask anybody in the world right now to sing on one of your songs, Paul, is there a particular singer you would ask?
Oh, man. Well, you know, somebody that he sings with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Russell Allen. I just absolutely would love to have him definitely on one. He's just got the strongest voice. I remember I played with Joel Holkstra on one of the cruises. He wanted to do some songs off his 13 record. And so he said, hey, you know, I said, by the way, who's singing? And he said, well, Jeff Scott Soto and Russell Allen. And I hadn't heard of Russell at the time. And he said, oh, man, wait till you hear him. He's got a strong voice. And sure enough, they let us rehearse one day on the boat. And I was like, wow, man, he can sing. So would love to have him. And you know, I've already worked with a lot of really strong, good singers. So I'm, you know, hoping to be able to talk a couple of them into helping me out, you know.
Paul, I'm looking forward to that and everything else you have coming up, especially in your work on the new Winger album, the solo project, the Mick Mars record. It sounds to me like there's a lot of good things to look forward to in the near future coming from you. So I'm really excited about that. Thank you for taking this amount of time to do this with me on this humble little grassroots show that I've been building up for the last year, just to educate people on music that gets lost in the shuffle that needs to be heard. You know,
good for you. I mean, and that's how it all starts. I mean, we all start small and, you know, I'm that's great. You're doing that.
I'm in it for the long haul, Paul. I mean, I don't think there's enough people talking about music in such a way these days. And I think we need more people actively, passionately talking about the music that they love. Cause, that's what we're here for, right?
That's it. That's it. You know?
All right, Paul. And by the way, I love what you got going on in the background. I love the, In the Heart of the Young. It's like a clock that you have back there.
That's a clock. Kip adding storage. And he's like, hey, you want this? I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? You know, matter of fact, I'm just here. I'm reprogramming. I'm going to be using a different keyboard. So I'm programming and getting all my guitars together. And tomorrow morning I'm driving up. We're playing a gig up in, St. Charles. And then we're doing the next night. We're playing in Kentucky with Quiet Riot, Us, Warrant, and Skid Row. So I'll get to see them sing that song live for the first time.
Let me know if you ever make it down to Florida. I'm in the Orlando area. It'd be great to catch a show one of these days. And
will do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks again for joining me here on Sonic Dorms, Paul. It really means the world. Hopefully we can do this again somewhere down the road. Really,
all right. Thanks for your time.
All the best, Paul. Until next time.